Kevin Plexico is Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services for Input. And welcome to the studio. Nice to have you. You've been on the station a number of times before, but first time on my show, so it's great to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me out.
Happy to do it. The Input synopsis, the preview of what will be happening in 2011 is one of the things we'll talk about today. We were happy to be at Fed Focus 2011 a couple of weeks ago. When that event wrapped, as you listened to what the speakers had to say at Fed Focus, what did you take away from their views about what people have to look forward to in 2011?
Well, I think there's a lot of uncertainty around the future of federal contracting in general.
Mm-hmm.
We have a budget deficit that is totally out of control, and what does that mean, and what's the impact of that going to be on how government funds agencies, and ultimately how our agency's going to translate, presumably what are going to be cuts in some areas, though they've protected other areas for the contracting community.
Mm-hmm. What are the particular aspects of that are the most concerning to the industry people that you talk to?
Well, I think first is, you know, a lot of companies in the area depend on the Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
They do about 50% of the contracting. They have very large procurements that have very long cycle times, and I think that's been where you have big buckets of money in the areas that tend to be the big targets, because that's where you can have the big impact.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing that we've seen is the uncertainty and expectation that we're going to have slower growth in the Defense Department, and with Secretary Gates' plan to trim $100 billion in costs over the next 5 years, where are those costs likely to come from? What programs are going to be impacted? I think that's what's on the mind of many of the companies in the D.C. area.
This is the first time since I've been paying attention to the federal budget process, 12 or 15 years, that I have seen so many plans circulating and proposals circulating about what to do with the budget, how to move priorities, shift priorities. How about you? Is that your experience too? I mean, we have like three different deficit commissions, and Secretary Gates is talking about what he wants to do. Members of Congress, sitting members, are circulating their own. It seems like everybody's got a different thing going.
Yeah, I feel like I've always heard the rhetoric around priorities.
Mm-hmm.
What I feel has been amplified is the urgency of the situation, given the debt crisis that we're in, being as bad as it's been since World War II, and the fact that our economy is not doing that great. There's a lot of concern about making big cuts in government spending at a time when the economy is not doing very well, but yet part of the reason many people would tell you the economy is not doing very well is the very problem that we're in is
mm-hmm.
we have too much debt. So
yeah.
People are skeptical about the future of our, you know, of our commercial industry.
Yeah. Your presentation at Fed Focus revolved around key issues and opportunities for 2011. Beyond that uncertainty, there's got to be some good news, I would think.
Sure, sure. I mean, there's definitely areas that have been carved out as protected from cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by cuts is overall cuts, not cuts to free up money for other areas where they need to invest. So in
right.
the Defense Department, ironically, where they're trying to make $100 billion in cuts, it is not to cut the defense budget overall. It's to slow down its growth
mm-hmm.
and to free up money that they feel is being wasted or spent inefficiently to areas that are perhaps more higher priority.
Mm-hmm.
There's other areas that have been excluded, including Homeland Security, including Veterans Affairs, and including obviously healthcare, where we have a plan to expand healthcare coverage to 30-some million uninsured people today. So those, to me, are some areas that people can bank on for long-term above market growth opportunity. And a couple other areas I'd probably call out is in areas like cybersecurity, where clearly the government's not done with the work that we have ahead there. Health information, health IT, those types of capabilities are clearly where the government has a tremendous opportunity to influence the direction of the nation's healthcare system and the economy associated with that to make it more efficient. They
mm-hmm.
have more to gain than anybody else from an inefficient healthcare system.
Yeah. I imagine, too, that the good news for people who are in those spaces is that a lot of the things that you just mentioned, the government is either in an initial phase, or maybe not infancy, but maybe the toddler phase of developing strengths in some of these areas. Cybersecurity is going to be, for the foreseeable future, an ongoing area where spending will need to be done, where protection needs to be done for the agency's networks. The federal government getting into the health IT realm, kind of on the ground floor, maybe the first floor of the skyscraper, still a lot of room to go up. So I guess that could be good news for the companies that work in those areas too.
Yeah, I think it's good news because it's a long-term opportunity, and you mm-hmm. can expect an area like that to be an opportunity for a long time. And one of the characteristics of the government market is the steady, consistent growth. You don't get big cuts and you don't get big ramp-ups in spending like you get in the commercial world. It tends to be more of the safe haven for companies when the market's down somewhere else, and they think it's boring when the commercial markets are skyrocketing. And we're kind of in a stage right now where the government market's coming off a pretty fast growth rate, at least in government terms. But in the commercial industry, it really hasn't picked up. So they kind of look a lot alike right now.
Mm-hmm. What else are the potential ups and downs in the coming year, the opportunities and maybe areas where companies might see some pullback?
So I think the key challenge is you're going to have to look at what happens with the appropriations process mm-hmm. with the House being taken over by the Republicans and how the appropriations process and the budgeting process for next year shakes out. I think the areas that I identified, cybersecurity, health, homeland security, I mean, again, those are kind of protected areas. The other areas, probably energy and environmental issues. They also have been tied into cost savings and efficiency where they can cut the cost of energy consumption by the federal government. There's probably some other areas. I think some of the other ones we're going to have to wait and see how the battles shake out on the Hill and with the president, with the new House and the leadership there.
And I imagine that's what's contributing a large part to the uncertainty that you were talking about at the beginning, which is we're still, the election's over. A lot of people, I think, thought that, well, once the election comes and goes and we see what happens, maybe we'll have some certainty. And now we find out that's really not the case, is it?
Yeah, you just have the certainty on who's heading the respective houses.
Yeah.
But there's such a difference between how both parties want to go after the problems that we have, mm-hmm. And they seem so unwilling to kind of collaborate and work together on a solution that it's hard to see. It's hard to see how it's going to shake out, to be honest with you.
Kevin Plexico is Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation continues just a moment.
Why does a waiting room have to feel like a waiting room? And does a stress test have to be so stressful? At Kaiser Permanente, we don't think it does, and we've made the changes to prove it. With brand new state-of-the-art facilities opening all around the Mid-Atlantic, like the Kaiser Permanente Capitol Hill Medical Center, we're poised to become the leader in healthcare for the D.C. and Baltimore area. With easier access to primary and specialty care, full-service radiology, lab tests, and pharmacy services, we're offering more choices than ever before. Our staff of top-notch physicians is growing by more than 200, providing greater access to care. And our innovative electronic medical records allow members to view their own medical history 24/7. Plus, members can email their doctor's office, check most lab results, refill prescriptions, and even choose their primary care and OBGYN all online. The future in healthier care is already here. Find it at kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Robert Kahn, Ph.D., from the panel discussion on Cyber 2020, the future of the Internet, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
And so when you have discussions like net neutrality, they were really not about the Internet, even though they were often claimed to be, because they weren't really challenging the protocols and procedures. They were really talking about policies that ought to apply to specific components of the Internet, like a communication service provider.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Pressing challenges around issues like cybersecurity, net neutrality, and Internet governance have one thing in common. They all exist in cyberspace. Booz Allen Hamilton believes scenario development, strategic planning, and new governance models are key to promote and protect U.S. economic, social, and security interests in cyberspace, while ensuring the openness of the Internet and the privacy of individuals. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at BoozAllen.com/expertvoices.
This week on Agency of the Month featuring the GSA is brought to you by Commercial Data Systems.
You might want to think twice before tossing out that old computer, GSAauctions.gov. It's kind of like the government's eBay. Here's GSA's Dave Robbins.
We sell everything from A to Z. We sell airplanes, boats, cars. We sold animals. We've sold CPR dolls. We've sold bowling alleys, porta potties, bedpans, furniture, computers, equipment, virtually anything that the government may use or may come in possession of the government.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
Commercial Data Systems is a small disadvantaged information technology systems integrator specializing in virtualization, cross-domain security, and database operations. With more than 25 years of contracting experience, CDS understands how to ease the procurement process for government clients. CDS offers GSA schedule purchasing with over 200,000 commercial off-the-shelf IT products, including a blanket purchase agreement for your Oracle hardware and software needs. To learn more, visit cdsinc.com. That's cdsinc.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon, helping the procurement community collaborate to do their jobs better. It's the idea behind the Frontline Forum. They were around in the 90s, remember that? They're back. An update from OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon. And data everywhere. We'll tap open data lessons from around the world from the International Open Government Data Conference this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Plexico of Input is my guest on this hour of the program, and we're talking about 2011, a prospectus as we get closer to the end. It's hard to believe it's the middle of November already, isn't it?
It's been flying this year.
Yeah, it hasn't seemed like it. Is that when things move that quickly in the government space, in the contracting space, is that usually good or bad, or doesn't make much difference one way or the other? Because I agree with you. It seemed like this year's just shot by.
I don't know that it's good or bad. It probably depends on the perspective of the company, whether they're above plan or below plan.
That's true. We were talking during the break about what you're seeing in acquisition and some of the trends that are showing themselves there. What are you seeing in that area?
Well, I think one of the things that's, if people who have heard me speak before have probably heard me say this, but I think one of the things that's fascinating about the federal government is it's just as important to pay attention to how they buy as mm-hmm. what they buy. They yeah. buy in such a unique way. It is such a massive body of law that directs how they spend. It's very complicated. So watching that, you almost see bigger swings in that type of thing than you see in how the government buys technology or products. So from my point of view, some of the things that we're seeing that are, I think, particularly notable is the increased use of task order-based contracts as a way of providing products and services and moving away from the large single award integrator-based programs that we've seen kind of from the past. And that's really been driven in large part by the government's need to leverage the contracting workforce that they have. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this at the break, how the government contracting workforce has not kept pace in terms of its size and capacity with the growth in government spending. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways they've leveraged that is to set up these framework contracts that they can drive business through, and it makes them more agile, able to compete things more quickly, and able to leverage the capacity of the workforce they have. So I think that's interesting because it has fundamentally changed the way that government contractors think about competing for work in the government.
Mm-hmm.
They spend a lot of time going after these large vehicles that have fundamentally no guarantee of work,
right?
And then have to organize themselves effectively to go after the smaller pieces that come out under those vehicles and compete against the people that are the other holders of the contract.
There is some discussion, a lot of it well below the radar screen, about whether that's really an efficient way for the government. It works well for them, but it doesn't necessarily ultimately deliver a value for the agency or the taxpayer because of what you're talking about. There's kind of two times when the companies have to spend money trying to generate business. They got to get on the contract in the first place and then go out and get all the work.
Yeah, I think there's pros and cons. It's certainly more efficient for the government. I think the challenge is it reduces from my point of view at least, it reduces some of the contracting opportunity and openness of government. They're still getting competition, but mm-hmm. it's among a finite set of companies versus having a competition that's open to any company for any particular acquisition. Though the trade-off of that is if I'm competing for that work, I'm going to have to wait 9 months right. versus 30 days to get the award.
Yeah, and it can put some companies in a real feast or famine situation because you find out, you wake up one morning and find out you didn't get on something you thought you were going to get on, and you're shut out of that potential work for however long the life of the contract is.
Right. I'll describe, take an organization like DHS, which spends about 30 to 40% of its IT services dollars through the Eagle contract. Mm-hmm. If you are not a winner of that Eagle 2 award that's being competed right now, you can think about yourself as being locked out of that percentage of the IT services opportunity available to you in that market
yeah.
for a prolonged period of time.
You might
be one of the best providers of a particular capability, but you're not able to offer to the government a broad set of capabilities that would be suitable for a task order based contract where they don't know what the nature of any individual task order is going to be.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that does to the mentality of the company as they're trying to make sure they've got to get every I dotted, T crossed, and make sure everything is buttoned down so they get on that contract?
I think it has the implication of them not having as close a relationship with the customer and therefore more willing to protest if they lose. Because
mm-hmm.
ultimately, if they lose the protest or if they lose an award and they protest, they're not really offending the end customer. They're affecting the acquisition shop.
Yeah.
And that's not, ultimately who's going to probably make a decision about the task orders that follow. So there's, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of risk in the protest in that circumstance. But if you don't get the position, you've obviously lost a huge opportunity. I think it depends on the company. Like large companies probably like it. Those companies that have a broad skill set because they can go after those with a very credible case of having performance in a long list of areas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard for a small company to demonstrate the ability to perform a very broad set of work. By
yeah.
definition, small companies tend to be specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think they're at a disadvantage.
They find themselves having to depend on getting on as subs with some of the big guns to get the work that they need to keep themselves growing.
Exactly. They find themselves having to develop relationships with the prime contractors that they know are going to win it and that they're more credible for that, but having to demonstrate both to the end buyer that I'm a good solution. And by the way, tell the prime contractor here that I'm a great solution and you'd probably have a better chance of getting them business if mm-hmm. I were on your contract.
Yeah. Yeah. The depth of that is, I think, magnified too then by the fact that, as we just talked about last hour with Marissa Levin, acquisition workforce is under a lot of pressure, not just the DOD. The focus seems to be on DOD when it comes to the acquisition workforce right now, but it's across government and making sure that people are trained and able to do a number of different things. And I imagine you're hearing some issues about the workforce from the companies that you're talking to as well.
I think It's probably not news to many people that the acquisition workforce is overworked. They haven't kept pace in terms of their growth with the capacity of spending. And spending has increased, I think, 50% over the last 4 or 5 years. Yet the workforce is basically flat.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think OFPP and the government, and Congress as well, has identified that that is an issue and has indicated intentions of expanding that workforce. And we've seen that in some of the recent data that capacity is growing, but mm-hmm. you're still talking about a major disconnect.
We're at a point now, I think, that is interesting. You mentioned Congress, where we have people in both houses and on both sides of the aisle who understand and who are in positions to influence what happens at the agencies and what happens with resources, that understand the benefit, no matter where they are ideologically, of having a robust workforce when it comes to acquisition, a well-trained workforce who knows how to get the things that we're getting the right way. And you talked about the fact that when you look at government and acquisition, how they do it is just as important as what they're buying.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that we're kind of at a unique point where we haven't been many times in history where people on the Hill, the people that need to get it, seem to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the challenge is with the people on the Hill. Many think that we spend too much on contractors to begin with, so the notion of expanding the workforce to accommodate the contracting turns into a circular argument of, well, we shouldn't be spending that much with contractors
yeah.
anyway. We should cut that and increase government hiring. But now you're running into kind of that reverse pattern of, yeah, they want to increase government hiring, but at the same time, they want to control spending.
Mm-hmm.
So they're putting hiring freezes out there as one of the ways to address that. So it's a circular conversation.
It's interesting because the only people that I have heard say that they think that the idea of a hiring freeze is a good idea are the people, the small group of members that are proposing it. I've never heard anybody from an agency say it's a good idea. I've never heard anybody from a contractor say it's a good idea. And there are plenty of members, again, on both sides of the aisle that say, wait a minute, if we want to talk about shrinking, let's think about it strategically and not just lop a number off the top. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to a lot of people.
Yeah, but you know, ironically, that was one of the components of Secretary Gates' plan, was to freeze, not necessarily acquisition workforce, mm-hmm. but freeze the hiring, particularly of flag officers, to keep that number down, reduce middle management, which a lot of acquisition professionals are kind of in that category,
mm-hmm.
and ironically stop the insourcing that's been taking place, which is one of the key things that Congress had been pushing for.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really have a interesting environment that we're
yeah,
in right now.
A lot of different dynamics at play. Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input, my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and our conversation continues in just a minute.
Radio. I'm Mark Chase. Appearing before the ethics committee that will decide his fate, Representative Charles Rangel asked the panel for fairness. The New York representative told members he's not guilty of corruption.
Never, but never was there an intent to hide anything from my constituents or from the IRS.
The panel is expected to recommend that the veteran congressman be censured for violation of House rules. President Obama continued his push for passage of the stalled START treaty, now stalled in Congress. The president called the pact a matter of national security, not politics. The Labor Department says first-time jobless claims were up a notch last week, but continuing claims have hit their lowest level in more than 2 years. And Thanksgiving just got a little more expensive, travel-wise, that is. Survey says some routes are up 50% over last year. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Mark Chase, NBC News Radio.
Hi, can I help you?
Yeah, hi. Are these 5 golden rings on sale?
No, they're not.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, well, what about the 8 maids of milking?
I'm sorry, no.
And the 7 swans of swimming?
The only items on sale are the 12 drummers drumming and the 2 turtle doves.
For holiday shopping without the hassles, come to Kohl's instead, where when we say it's all on sale, we mean everything. Even the stuff you really want, with no exclusions. This Friday and Saturday, only at Kohl's. The more you know, the more you Kohl's. Kohl's. Expect great things.
Right now at the Home Depot, get an LG Extra Large Capacity Front Load Steam Washer or Steam Dryer for $599 each, $800 off the pair. Get steam technology that makes ironing easier and extra savings for your shopping season. We're lowering the cost of front loading your holidays with an LG Washer or Dryer for $599 each. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. While supplies last, U.S. only, limit one pair per customer. See store for details.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight, brought to you by Cisco.
It sounds basic, but one military branch is trying to be better prepared for dealing with cyber attacks. Here's Riley Repko, Senior Cyber Advisor to the Deputy Chief of Staff for Operations and Requirements at the Air Force.
The last thing that an operator needs is to have an adversary nipping at their heels to turn to their support staff and say, how do I fix it, and be handed the yellow pages. We've got to be aware of these capabilities in advance.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. few, the proud, the Marines.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other healthcare needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Mega Food and Gero Formula.
Concrete, the most widely used building material in the world, inevitably cracks over time. So engineers are working on a concrete that heals itself. Concrete is made by mixing cement, water, sand, and rocks. M.R. Hansen, a South Dakota School of Mines and Technology civil engineering professor, wants to alter that mixture a bit, replacing some of the sand with a porous material that absorbs and stores water and keeping in bigger particles of cement.
The main thing is don't grind it quite as fine, and we can control that.
A final touch might be
some additive to the water that would make it travel through the cracks more easily.
Then when a crack occurs, the stored water would leak out, activating unused cement in those larger particles to seal the cracks. It could not only restore structural strength, but save time, money, and materials. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for feds on the go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Kevin Plexico. He's Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input, and my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose. And one of the areas where people are seeing a lot of changes on the agency side is in performance and management reform. Jeffrey Zients has started to put some guidelines, some metrics out there by which agencies will be measured. How is that affecting the way that companies do business with the agencies where these changes are happening?
Well, I think it's probably not affecting them much yet, but I think it's going to have an impact in areas like IT consolidation. I look at the Accountable Government Initiative, which is the direction that Zients put out, really putting forward kind of a message around the president's management agenda that had been rolled out in pieces before. I think we heard about government contracting reforms, trying to get more fixed price and competitive procurements, trying to cut waste, reduce the abuse, waste, and fraud that takes place in some of the government programs as a way of saving money. And certainly we've heard from the CIO plans to consolidate, rely more on things like cloud computing. These, to me, are all initiatives that started separate from each other but have come together under this Accountable Government Initiative and more of a cohesive plan for management reform in the government. Some of them are motherhood and apple pie. You know, it's every president that's come in has had some set of these that look a little bit similar. They're hard to argue the benefits of them.
Right.
But I think the atmosphere right now seems to be more of a crisis atmosphere because of the debt problem that we have, that I think it could drive more activity than we might have seen in some of the past agendas where they didn't have that same kind of driving reason to make the changes.
Yeah, the one that jumps out at me is the improper payments mandate. Danny Werfel's talked about that probably 788 times in the past 6 months about finding where these payments are going out that shouldn't be and just stopping them cold. So that's another area where agencies are trying to figure out, how do I change dramatically what I'm doing? And that, I imagine, is where these companies are going to see the potential in, as some of these agencies, you always use the analogy of the battleship and how you turn it, but these battleships need to be turned, and they're going to depend, they don't have the people in-house to do it, so they're going to be looking for the ability to buy this intelligence.
Yeah, and we see with the drive to improve efficiency and cut costs, I think we're seeing a lot of momentum behind anti-waste, fraud, and abuse measures, and those measures often require companies to help. I think that where in that challenge lies opportunity for companies to help agencies identify, detect these things through forensics, through business intelligence software and capabilities like that, as well as through resources that can come in from a consulting point of view to help agencies figure out how can they better manage, better be more effective in tracking this kind of thing out. And there's literally hundreds of billions of dollars that are identified as wasteful spending related to some of the major entitlement programs. So there's big buckets to go after of money just in those spaces.
How is that likely to look different? We're talking primarily about 2011, but a lot of these initiatives don't look like they're going to go away anytime soon. So these are more areas, as we talked about before, where maybe somebody can step in and think there's opportunity here beyond the next year or two.
Yeah, sure. I mean, very few government problems are solved in a year. But what you see is kind of momentum building for these things. And that's ultimately what companies are looking for is areas that they can make an investment that they can expect to return for a prolonged period of time. Winning one contract by itself doesn't help a company long term to build a viable business.
Yeah. Kevin Plexico of Inputs, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. He is the Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services there, and we'll continue our conversation on the outlook for contracting when In Depth continues.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Bill Dugan, the national president of the National Federation of Federal Employees, you were looking to scale back your agenda.
The Employee Free Choice Act, I think that's probably a non-starter. Given the fact that we're running deficits, it's going to be very difficult to move legislation that has a large price tag. So there's some aspects of reforming training in federal government that have little or no price tag.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kevin Plexico of Input is my guest. And earlier in the hour, you were talking about the task order-based contracting and the fact that there are a lot of them. And you mentioned Eagle 2 that's being competed. And there's a bunch of them out there all over the agencies. Do you think we'll see more? Do you think we'll see bigger ones? Do you think we'll see their use continue to grow? I mean, the agencies seem to like them. The vendors maybe not as much, but they certainly are still are competing awfully hard to get on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at agencies as having kind of a cycle of these. When they award a task order-based contract, usually the first 2 to 3 years, the contract ramps up very quickly. And then it kind of hits its peak, and then it starts to wane down again. Mm-hmm. But that's usually when the agency's starting to think about, okay, what's the next vehicle I need to line up so mm-hmm. that I can continue the momentum of having these vehicles in place so I always have a place to go for our internal customers who want to use those types of vehicles. I haven't seen anything that tells me agencies are going to be slowing down their use of these vehicles. They seem to be very efficient for them from their point of view, of getting things awarded quickly. Mm-hmm. The only things that I saw that could kind of push them out of that is if the protest challenge, you know, one of the reasons that agencies went to them was a way of preventing protests on mm-hmm. task orders. And now that that's gone, that benefit has gone away. But there's still the benefit of the speed with which you can compete things, the speed with which you can award pieces of work, leveraging and negotiated terms and conditions that's already kind of sitting in place, and narrowing the field of competition to companies that you feel are already kind of pre-qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen anything that tells me agencies are going to be moving away from them. I think they're going to continue to be used, probably continue to grow rather quickly as a percentage of government spending. So I think from my point of view, agencies or vendors really need to not fight upstream, go with the flow, and try to find a way to be successful in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Change is hard. Nobody likes it, but it's certainly what you're saying makes a lot of sense. This is the way of the world that they're choosing to do business with. It's hard for people to shift gears, but it's really necessary.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there's still lots of opportunity. There's still prime contractors that are trying to do everything under these vehicles to meet the requirements, and they still need specialized skills to make sure they're going to do that work effectively
mm-hmm.
And for the customer's best interest. So there's still opportunity to do the subcontracting, but it does require a bit more strategic thinking about not only what do the agencies need, but what are the vehicles they're going to use to make sure you're aligned with who you're targeting, with what your products are, and what agencies you want to do business with, so that you can be easy to do business with for the agency.
Yeah. Something we were talking about during the break that I think is worth mentioning. The concept of the larger and larger and the task order-based contracts is kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum from what the OMB is talking about and what the agencies are trying to shoot for when it comes to the actual jobs themselves. They're talking about shrinking timelines and shrinking size and moving to a lot of component-based execution where you do this piece, make sure it works, then you do this piece and make sure it works rather than doing 1-5 or 10-year project or whatever. And that's kind of at odds with the trend in how you're getting the materials and services to do the jobs themselves. I think that's kind of an interesting juxtaposition.
My sense is that someone in government on the program side would argue that this is actually a way of enabling that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have to compete these pieces of work individually through the traditional RFP process, I'll be done in 20 years by the time I get the fifth or sixth award made.
Right.
This, the task order mechanism gives them a way to define smaller pieces of work and award them more quickly. The disadvantage is they may not always be getting the best company and the best skill set for that particular piece of work because that company might not have had the broad set of skills to be on a team that could meet a broad set of requirements, but they're very, very good at that one specific thing that that agency needed for that particular task order, but they're effectively locked out of it.
Yeah. You mentioned protests, and the protest explosion, I think, is fascinating because every single vendor I've ever talked to talks about how much they hate protests and they wish they didn't happen, and I'm sure nobody ever thinks that they should have been protested against. And yet they continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger, more and more and more. And there doesn't seem to be any balance. It's hard to find a balance, of how you try to reduce the number of protests. Any sense of,
well, I guess I have a couple
headed?
Thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. The first is, I think the increase in protests, there's a bit of hype to it that's not real. And the reason I say that is when they changed the law to allow companies to protest allow companies to protest task orders, you effectively increased the universe of opportunities that are protestable by an order of magnitude. And all of a sudden, the individual transactions on those task order contracts are now protestable. So I would expect if you were to take a percentage of the total transactions that are protestable and increase the volume of transactions, you're going to get a commensurate increase in the number of protests. So I think in some respects, I don't know that companies are using it more frequently, except to the extent that they're able to use it more frequently. The percentage of transactions that are protestable is probably about the same.
Mm-hmm.
But what is interesting about the task order world, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, when you have these big, huge contracts where they're setting up just a framework, not buying an individual piece of work, it used to be one of the key kind of built into the system prevention techniques for protests was a company didn't want to offend a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're competing for a task order contract, oftentimes it's not your end customer that you're offending. It's an acquisition shop that you're offending. And so you're disconnected a little bit from who you were offending originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the motivation or that kind of built in motivation to not protest isn't as big, yet the opportunity and the risk if you don't win it is
right.
A lot bigger.
It's a lot bigger. Kevin Plexico of Input, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. One more conversation, one more segment to go, and we'll wrap up our conversation with Kevin just a few minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Commerce and National Telecommunications and Information Administration have released a report called Digital Nation 2 that analyzes broadband internet access across the United States. The study is the most comprehensive of its kind. It finds that even after accounting for socioeconomic differences, large gaps persist along racial, ethnic, and geographic lines. The report analyzes data collected through a survey of 54,000 households conducted by the Census Bureau. It shows that while virtually all demographic groups have experienced increases of broadband internet use at home, and 64% of households overall use broadband, there are still historic disparities among demographics. Officials worry that Americans who lack broadband internet access are cut off from educational and employment opportunities.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Living with arthritis. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicates more than 22% of American adults live with arthritis, and more than 42% have the condition so bad that it limits their activities. Researcher Jennifer Hootman says the rate of people developing activity limitation is going up faster than the scientists had expected. Dr. Hootman notes that obesity is one of the leading risk factors for arthritis, and being obese also makes symptoms worse. So she advises people with arthritis.
They should be physically active because exercise increases muscle strength and can help support the joints. If you're overweight, lose weight. If you're normal weight, maintain your weight.
The study is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
WashingtonCaps.com is the destination for behind-the-scenes coverage of your Washington Capitals. Get the most comprehensive Caps coverage with in-depth previews and analysis for every game, and blog, Twitter, and Facebook updates all day, every day. Check out Caps 365, where you can view all the best goals, saves, and hits, and access exclusive player interviews, press conferences, and much more. Check it all out on WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for November is the March of Dimes. Do you know a baby who was born too soon, too small, or unable to breathe on his own? With one in every eight babies born prematurely, you probably do. The rate of premature birth has risen more than 30% since 1981. In half the cases, they simply don't understand what went wrong. November is Prematurity Awareness Month, and March of Dimes is leading the fight for answers and preventions. Learn more. Visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input, my guest on In Depth. And we've spent a lot of time talking about task orders over the last part of the show. But overall, when people are thinking about the market and what it will look like in 2011 and even beyond that, what should people be thinking about? How should they be approaching when they're thinking about trying to form some strategy for the next couple of years?
So I think when companies are probably kind of keeping track of the market and reading the newspapers and following the news, it's probably easy to think there's doom and gloom ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the appropriations bills that are floating out there today and how they hang with the president's budget, they're really not that far off. You know, we're talking 1 to 2 percentage points of difference, which in the scheme of the federal budget is just not, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not that much of a difference.
Right.
So I would expect that we're going to have appropriations that up the federal budget, you know, 2 to 3% in aggregate, a little bit lower than what we've seen in the past, but it's certainly not doom and gloom. It's certainly not negative growth that some people might have a suspicion is going to happen based on the way the news is tracking it. And I do think there's still some areas in that are going to be above market growth opportunities. We've talked about some of those in the healthcare area,
mm-hmm.
certainly to support the infrastructure that has to get built around implementing the healthcare reform. And even absent that, the need to drive IT adoption and enablement in the health industry is an opportunity that's clearly going to be around for a long time. I think the energy and environment area, many view that as an area that is part and parcel to our future, both financially in terms of the cost of energy and foreign oil, as well as just being good stewards of our environment and being efficient. And then areas like cybersecurity and IT. IT mainly from the point of view of when you start talking about making government more efficient, you can't have that conversation go very far before you start talking about where you need to automate and improve the way things work. And that almost always draws in the folks with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you talk about the task order world, you know, people need to think about the task order contracts like they would think about a marketing or a sales channel. It's just yet another way to get your products into the market, and it's important to have that channel. Once you have it, it's much easier to spread your wings and bring more things, diversified kinds of offerings into the market. The challenge is getting that initial channel. Once you have it, It's worth its gold, mm-hmm. worth its weight in gold.
If you and I have this conversation a year or so from now, and I hope we do, based on the trends that you're thinking about and hearing for 2011, what do you think we'll see maybe in February or March when we start to see the budgets for fiscal 2012 and how that might shake out? You know, what kind of markers do you think we ought to be looking for?
I would not expect to see major changes to the federal budget on the discretionary side. I really think the challenge ahead for the federal government is not as much on the discretionary side. You know, we're going to have the puts and takes around driving efficiency and freezing some budgets that aren't as high a priority, but it's going to be made up by areas that there's general view that we need to expand, like Veterans Affairs, like healthcare, like Homeland Security. I mean, those areas have been kind of accepted from the president's, at least from the president's perspective, mm-hmm. not necessarily from the Republican perspective. So I wouldn't expect to see much change in the president's budget from where we are today. I really think that the long-term change is going to come down to how they deal and tackle the entitlement programs. And those obviously have contractors supporting them in many ways, but that's where they're going to get the big bang is having an impact for our future is how they address the entitlement disconnect, the cost that we've built into our budgets going forward for entitlement programs versus the money that we're collecting to pay for them.
Kevin, terrific insight. There's a lot more I'd like to cover, and I'm out of time. The Dorbeck Insider will come in here and physically remove me if I don't shut up and let him get in here and do his thing. It's great to see you, and it's great to have you in here today, and I'd love to have you come back and talk more about these
things. You very much. I very much enjoyed it.
Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input, my guest for the hour on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. No In-Depth tomorrow, no new program. You'll be hearing the best of In-Depth between 1 and 3. You will hear my conversation with Dov Zakheim, formerly of the Pentagon, in the 1 o'clock hour tomorrow, and the Federal News Countdown tomorrow at 2, as always, on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Chris Dorabek is next with today's Dorabek Insider program between 3 and 7, and I'll talk to you live again on Monday at 1 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.